The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Mark Amtower of Amtower and Company, which is entirely responsible for its content.
This is Amtower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off Center with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com at 1500 AM, where it is now showtime with Maria Horton. Maria is the current CEO, the only CEO of EMISEC and former CIO of the Naval Medical Center in Bethesda, amongst other gigs in a prior life. Maria, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Glad you're here. First and foremost, tell people who you are, your background, and what EMISEC does for our market, please.
That's terrific. I'm Maria Horton. I'm the CEO and founder of EMISEC Incorporated. My experience comes from a background in the military. I'm a veteran. I'm retired from the Navy. My last job on active duty was the CIO for National Naval Medical Center, as you had said, Mark. From that experience, I understood in the year 2003 that pretty much cybersecurity or security would be the foundation for almost all businesses and applications. As a result, I started EMISEC, and I decided that I would focus in that arena. It's been pretty exciting. I've been in business 13 and a half years. I have 46 employees. We're moving forward, and we do cloud security and engineering consulting. And that might sound pretty big, but we focus very much on the cybersecurity and the cloud portion. And the reason that we do is we've looked out across the economy and the millennials and the applications that are out there. And this is a space that companies and other businesses need to understand how to protect in today's world of all kinds of attacks. So that's kind of our focus and where we are.
Okay, so 13 years old, 46 employees. So you haven't had to refocus the primary niche that you serve in the market over those 13 years? Fine-tune, perhaps, but not alter.
I would say that we have altered it, and I'll give a great example for some of the small and medium-sized businesses out there. When I started in 2003, we were an information assurance company, and we really were unable to earn a prime contract at that time, so we subcontracted with other system integrators. That was the way information assurance was done at that time. Over a period of time through 2005 to 2009, approximately, there were some cybersecurity contracts that were being let. They were still called information assurance. But at this time, we saw it become more technical, new skills as we matured in the cyberspace. The other thing that happened was there was a release of a number of other companies that finally saw that information assurance and cybersecurity was profitable. There were a lot of discussions about what multiples would be paid in that arena. And so there was a flood of new federal contractors specializing in cybersecurity. As a result, my company needed to look at itself and say, okay, we've been here a while, we're still small. How are we going to compete with companies that may have greater resources, better networking, other capabilities that we don't have? And so we went in, and in 2013, we retooled the company a bit. We focused on cloud. Actually, it was 2012. We became one of the FedRAMP 3 PAOs. We saw that cloud was going to be a major way of transacting services. We saw that security would focus on the cloud, and so we retooled. And in that retool or change, we actually reset the entire baseline. We used FedRAMP as that capability, and we were very happy to be the 16th company selected as a 3PAO. But we didn't just look at it and say, okay, here are our new services. We went back and we hired designers, social media people, and we looked at our logo, we looked at our tagline, and I restructured the company. I have a wonderful logo that says EMISEC, in which the SEC is in the cloud. We looked at our marketing materials. We even, in the last year, have looked at how we do B2B marketing, right? So when people retool, they need to think a little bit bigger than, I'm just going to offer a new service.
Okay. So the name EMISEC, Where'd it come from?
It has two stories. A lot of folks who know me know this story. The Emmy portion is all about me, and the security part is all about security, right? Mm-hmm. So EmmySec. But when I hired some folks, they said, well, we can't say that, right? So I went, okay, it's going to ensure, manage, and evolve security. And it's an underlying philosophy of the company. Security today is not what security was when I opened the company in 2003, nor was it the type of security that were in the mainframes in the 80s, right? So I believe that that will be true 10 years from now when we look at artificial intelligence, we look at some of the other capabilities from IoT, the type of cybersecurity and critical infrastructure protection that we do will change. And EmmySec will stand that test, at least from its soundbite, because we want to ensure, manage, and evolve that security practice.
Okay. So you're almost 14 now.
Yes.
That's a major milestone.
I don't really look at it that way. I think it's great to be here, and I look at how the company has evolved. But the reality is I like the challenges, and I like what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And so I don't really think about the years. Sometimes I think I could be more successful for the amount of time that I've been in business. But when I ask other small and medium-sized businesses, it does take a while to get to be known. It takes a while to be able to share what your strengths and weaknesses are.
Okay. Well, government executive did this thing on brands 2 months or so back, and they were highlighting how great big brands were wonderful. And I'm sitting next to a guy, Peter Jacobs from Alion Science and Tech, right? Mm-hmm. And we're looking at each other going, that doesn't really play out in this market because there are niche companies that are extraordinarily well-known in their niches to their clients, but they're not something if you put on TV, people would go, oh yeah, I know them. So for you, which are your sweet spots? Which agencies are your sweet spots in the government, and do they know you?
That's a tricky question for a couple different reasons. In addition to retooling, my company is now about 30% commercial. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of work with other companies who want to be in the federal market. But for my federal contracting base, the ones that know us, they know us on what in the Navy would have been called the deck plate, down on the ground doing the work and accomplishing the tasks. And part of this is the changing economy that has created a big challenge for many small and medium-sized businesses. Oftentimes, government looks at us and they see us as a subcontractor. And as a result, they're not necessarily looking at our brand or our niche. They're really looking at who can they get to on an IDIQ. And although IDIQs are great, and I have quite a few, and I'm very proud of all of the ones that I have, the reality is sometimes that's a gatekeeper to really getting to have your brand out there for the government to know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
because there's so many other companies, like you're on C4D for one.
I am on C4D. I'm on 8A Stars 2, which is a wonderful prime vehicle.
They're both great, but they both have literally hundreds of companies.
They do. And you, how do you make yourself different when there are 425 other companies?
We should talk.
Well, I'll take all your advice that you give, Mark. And I think that's true. I would say one other thing about branding and being known. To your point, 14 years is a milestone. I think it takes a while to get known, but it also takes a while to mature into those spaces. And every company has a different level of maturity, and you have to be ready to handle the opportunities that come to you. That doesn't happen quickly. Sometimes it does, but oftentimes it's just part of the growth of a company.
Okay. So you're on STARS. Are you still in the 8A program?
No, I'm not. I graduated. I was in the program for 9 years. I thought it was valuable. There were some things I would do better, some things I would do worse, had I known what the program was like when I got in, but you never really know that.
No, not until you're neck deep.
True. But we like the program a lot because it gives our customers who really like us a way to reach out to us. And it also is something that allows the government to be efficient and to work forward and get those contracts that they need awarded.
Okay. We're going to take our first break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. We will be back right after this. Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I am Mark Amtower. I'm here with Maria Horton of EMESEC. You can find her at emesec.net. You can find her on LinkedIn. And occasionally you can find her speaking at various industry events. So one of the things you touched on briefly in the first segment was a slight diversification. When you started, you were totally focused on the federal market. But somewhere along the line, you diversified a little bit. Why and how?
That's a really great question, Mark. And I think it's reflected in most people in the economy today, right? So for us, as we were earning our 3PAO through FedRAMP, we also realized and looked at the extent and impact of cloud applications. Just like the government is going cloud first, most businesses go cloud first. And so as we were accredited as the 3PAO, we also saw the ability to be able to offer those kinds of consultation services to Palo Alto companies, to other California startups, some in New York, some on the East Coast in the DC area. And as a result of the FedRAMP piece, we were able to provide Chief Information Security Officer as a service capabilities. We were able to provide security engineering consultation. And it actually has led to our newest segment in the commercial market, which is called CUI compliance. In fact, we have a hashtag Simplify CUI group on LinkedIn. And what we're doing there is working with a number of federal contractors who need to meet the new controlled unclassified information compliance mandate. This has come out from FARS and DFARS, and it's something that small and medium-sized businesses are struggling with because already they're moving forward trying to compete for new business, but now they have to be compliant. The CUI compliance is a good thing for government in that it standardizes how we're going to protect our supply chain, the vendors, and the information for federal contractors. But the struggle part is that most small businesses now have to look at their own infrastructure, how they handle information, and sometimes they need help. That was a sweet spot for us. It has taken off in the last 12 months like gangbusters. We have tools, we have consulting, we've been running templates with some of our customers, providing that kind of service and looking at a handoff where they can do it themselves. So it's a very exciting time to be in business in this area.
I would imagine that would open a few speaking gigs as well.
It has. I've been on the road for a couple weeks, and it's really great because when I get to talk to people, I hear their issues, and it might be like snippets of free consulting, but it's a chance to hear the challenges and to provide creativity because I believe that security has to be efficient and it has to be good, but it also reflects the due diligence of company owners and their boards. It's really important to look at it from that perspective.
Okay. The boards is something we're going to get to because a lot of small companies don't have them and perhaps should, and you can explain why a little later. So I want to touch again. You've been in the 8A program. You're a graduate of the 8A program. You are a woman-owned small. You are a veteran-owned small. You're a service-disabled veteran-owned small.
I am, all of those things.
So pluses and minuses. I mean, go anywhere you want with this one.
I think that the socioeconomic designators are helpful to a point. They also bring with them some preconceived notions by government as well as commercial, collegial, federal contractors. You have to prove who you are. And you might get a socioeconomic designation, but you should be thinking the entire time, how am I going to survive and support the employees and families that I have with my business? I'm always going to be woman-owned, but I, as a service-disabled, veteran-owned business, I actually share with my government customers that that's a bonus. They get to take all of the check marks that they get for that. But we really want to compete on our competencies and our services. And we look at that and we look at that performance. It's the reason my company as a small business holds 4 ISO international standard organization certifications. We have 4 ISO certs. And I think those are important, just as important as any socioeconomic designator you might have.
Most certainly. Certs in our market are an absolute, particularly in the IT arena.
Absolutely.
Absolute must. And I have arguments with people on occasion, you know, they insist on, you know, putting MBA on their name line on LinkedIn. And I'm going, nobody gives it anymore. You know, what are your certs? What do you bring to the table? You know, MBAs, you know, I don't mean to demean them, but they're a dime a dozen right now.
So I would say that when you look at somebody's baseline education, I think it's important to have a baseline education in an area of expertise. But I'll just kind of extend your commentary in a little bit of a different direction. I think it's how you have continued to improve yourself personally and professionally, and how you're looking at the market that you are facing today. We need change. We are in a cloud IoT environment. We can't use the same security practices. We can't use the same HR practices. We can't use some of the same business and program management practices, because the way we do business is different. And so it's great as a starting place, but now adapt that to the environment that you're in so that you'll flourish, your business will flourish, and the people who work for you, they'll be loyal all day long because it'll be interesting.
Point. I agree. You know, there's got to be, go back to the socioeconomic designations. There has to be cake. Icing is great, but there has to be cake.
Absolutely.
So on the IoT things, you know, I'm convinced my refrigerator's spying on me. You know, so it's sending information to my insurance companies. Oh, his rates are going to go up.
Maybe. Depends on if you're just eating that icing, Mark.
Well, there's that. I have a Fitbit now, so I'm tracking. I'm over 5 miles a day. So
I want to go back a little bit and talk about how are we going to look at the new world, and what do we need to think about from those challenges for small and medium-sized businesses, right? One of the first things that I would say that is, as we look at the new markets, I'll use the CUI example, where new federal contractors must be compliant by the end of December next year. I would encourage those folks to take a fresh look, right? What does that mean? Federal contractors who hold the GSA IT-70 schedule are required under the MASS modification to say that they're CUI compliant when they sign that document by November 30th. For those who are out there who don't know what that means, do your homework. Do a little research. I have a ebook primer that I posted on my website. Mm-hmm. I've encouraged other people to call us.
EMCSEC.net. Download the book.
Call us for a free consultation, 15 minutes. What does it mean? Look up the requirements, because your business is going to be dependent upon being able to raise your hand and say, yes, I am CUI compliant. Our government needs to know that for a lot of different reasons, but one of the most important is protecting our information in the supply chain. How do we share information with the government? What do they give to us? What do we develop and share back? So I'm a believer that you need to understand that process inside your company and outside your company.
Yeah, I mean, there's a million and one things to understand contractually with the government. And then there's a million and one things you have to understand about the ecosystem in order to thrive. So for small companies, that becomes a little much. So I'm really glad you picked up the ball on the CUI issue, because a lot of people really don't understand that there are going to be repercussions if you check that box and you're not.
Absolutely. You could actually lose a contract that you've already spent time and money winning and promoting if you can't comply with the mandate. And so these are things that you have to think through. How does your architecture work? Where do you store your data? Small, medium size, and large businesses are going to have to roger up how they protect our government's information.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to take the break early here, because I want to get into your contract suite after the break, and I want to spend a significant amount of time there. So we're going to break here. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. We shall return right after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I am Mark AmTower. I'm here with Maria Horton of EMESEC, EMESEC.net. Go there, and if you're a small or medium or anybody else, go there and download the the CUI ebook, because this thing, if you're not aware of everything that's going on here, this thing's going to come bite you in the butt in a really rude way. But that's not what I want to talk about this segment. I want to talk about your contractual bandwidth, because it's pretty decent for a company of 46 people. So we have, aside from the schedule, we have 8A Stars, we have EFAST, we have C-Port E, and you have a BPA from OMB.
Yes. These are vehicles to help the government to get what they want to get and to be able to be visible among the different agencies. One of the things that you asked me was, where are we visible? We've been visible in VA. T4 is now out there, and we have worked with a half dozen of the primes in the original T4, and now with T4 Next Gen, we're teaming with others as well. When we look at C-Port E, we are building out our customers. About 30% of our business over the lifetime of EMISEC has been DOD. Part of that is from my military background, but the other part is that DOD really likes small businesses, and they like to be able to look at veteran-owned and service-disabled veteran-owned. And we went after those vehicles because without them, you really can't showcase the strengths of where you are. Even if you don't bid on everything or you have to limit what you bid to, you really need to have some kind of presence to be able to go forward, not only yourself, but with your teaming partners. EFAST is another one where we're looking at that with FAA. We've bid on a couple of things on there, actually more than a couple, but we haven't gotten any traction yet. And so I would say to small and medium-sized businesses, you need the vehicles so that you can say yes when you meet with the customer, but you also need them so that you can go out and meet your colleagues and competitors. We have found more teaming partners doing other types of bids through the IDIQs. Who are our partners? Where do we go? How do we meet them? How do we put together our resources through the contract vehicles? And I think that's a very helpful thing.
Well, there's some lessons here for your other small business friends as well. Just because a contract exists doesn't mean you need a prime slot.
Correct. And you have to be strategic in nature. What can I afford to maintain and manage? I have a handful of contracts as a prime, but the reality is that requires daily or every other day care and feeding. How am I going to review the opportunities that come across from those? In some instances, there are task orders and contracts that require you to respond yes or no on each of the task orders. So when you go after these things as a CEO or your proposal teams or whoever does it within your business, you need to evaluate, can you afford to support those contracts as a prime? Sometimes it's easier to be a subcontractor if you have a strong relationship with another prime and you become aligned so that you give great services together as partners.
Okay. So when you're looking at, we'll use a nameless large GWAC, okay?
Okay.
How do you vet from your side who you want to partner with and how do you approach them?
That's a great question. First, we go through the nameless GWAC and we identify what the requirements are and how they're going to evaluate it. Sections L and M of the RFP, identifying our own strengths and weaknesses and where we have gaps. I do gap analysis all day as a security expert, right? I look at risk assessments. Well, that's a risk assessment. Look at L&M. Identify what you can do great and where you need to shore up your strengths so that you can go after that with a teammate who has those strengths. One of the examples, we looked at Alliant and Vets GWAC this year. If you know, they publicized their grading scorecards so that individual companies could evaluate themselves.
Right.
That's something that we do normally, but I thought it was really innovative because there are two benefits. For the government side of the house, it kind of dissuaded people who were marginal as performance according to the criteria. So they might not have to spend as much time evaluating potential contractors who maybe wouldn't fill the bill. On the other side, as a company, it helped focus you on what you really needed to do to convince and convey the capabilities of your company in a very strong manner. I think that small and medium-sized businesses on a regular basis should be doing that when they go after proposals or opportunities. The other thing that I would say, though, is I don't ever discount the bluebird. You know the old-fashioned bluebird? there are people who will call up government agencies and they'll ask, can you do a bid? In some instances, I always worry that they need the third bid or that they're looking for a little more competition to make sure that something they already feel is going to be the winner or someone that's going to be the winner needs more competition. But I also look at it positively and optimistically that that's an opportunity for me to serve a new customer. And so we'll go after those, and we have a budget for Bluebirds. We look at it from a resource perspective, not just the money, but the time. Do we have the time to do a good enough job to win some of those capabilities? And we've had that.
You're talking about the time on the front end, not after you win?
Correct. Yeah. The time on the front end. Do we have enough time to put in a competent proposal that showcases the strengths of our company? When that happens, and we've had that happen, in particular under 8A Stars, where we're a prime, we've filled in where other companies maybe left a gap. And that's been good business for us. And so we enjoy doing that.
I love those Bluebirds. They can pay some bills.
Yes, they can.
So following up on that, so you vetted the primes or the companies that you want to partner a team with. How do you market yourselves to them, and do you leverage social media in that process?
Oh, great question. So I think this is a two-pronged approach. Number one, everybody should have their own what I would call social network. And I don't mean that from the technology standpoint. There are people I know like you, Mark, or there are others that I know in business. I reach out to them. I talk to them. Or they'll call us and they'll say, hey, Maria, what's up? What are you looking at? Can you team with us? And I think that that old-fashioned telephone conversation or face-to-face meeting is important in reassuring and enhancing your relationship with individuals. There's also social media where we're connected on LinkedIn, and I reach out to partners and colleagues in that way. I also use LinkedIn to search for companies that I don't yet know. Do they have a great write-up? Are they participating on comments? Do I see them in the news groups? And so I look at that from a social and vetting standpoint, if you will. Mm-hmm. And that's been very helpful to us. We've found new partners that way. We've also found people that we might not be able to partner with today. But for me, I always recognize that it takes 3 to 6 months to really have those relationships sink in and grow a little bit so that you can know more about one another.
Yeah, the mistake some people make about LinkedIn, and they don't use it because of it, is they think it will become the primary mechanism. It is an adjunct mechanism, especially for our market. I love it because everywhere I go, whether I'm speaking or just attending an event, if somebody sees me, they recognize the name, they'll assume we've met, but it's because of my activity on LinkedIn. We may not have met. The odds are we haven't, because I don't get out a hell of a lot.
I also think it's interesting because one of the most fun and really kind of, I don't know if it's fun is the right word, but when I do a lot of speaking engagements, I was in California last week, I'm going to a couple other conferences, I love when attendees look me up, right? So I have presence and they come back.
Before and after.
Before and after. And they take a look at who I am or who my company is. And we have an EmmySec Facebook. We kind of put our information out there in social media. We are not an expert by any means. We are still learning in that space. It's a hard space. It was very difficult for me to get into the social media space. Part of it might be my age, part of it might be my military background, but getting into social media, you have to kind of get in the swing of things, and the only way to do that is to stick your toe in the water and try to figure it out.
Yep.
I use a number of millennials in my company. I love it. They are fearless is the best word. They are willing to try those things. They have 3 different devices running at the same time while they're looking at their email that I'm sending to them, and they give great advice. I would recommend to small and medium-sized businesses, if you haven't found a millennial of your choosing, go out and look at it. They are great. I love my employees who are in that space and who are doing things like updating our B2B stuff, looking at our Facebook, providing me information. Face-to-face, I can give you a lot of euphemisms and jokes, and it's easy. But doing that in 144 characters isn't necessarily my sweet spot.
Yeah, Yeah, no, mine either. I do use Twitter, but it's primarily as a push mechanism when I find articles or some things that I like and are interesting. I want to get them out there. So it's Twitter, LinkedIn, then Facebook, and perhaps Google Plus.
I agree. I tell a lot of folks I'm kind of nerdy on Twitter because I don't really talk about anything but the conferences that I go to, and I share that information with people who haven't been fortunate enough to go to a conference, because I'm looking real time at what's going on in the market and in the way security is often being done. And so I share those on my Twitter, at Maria Horton.
At Maria Horton. There you go. And that's not difficult to spell.
I hope not.
There you go. All right, we're going to take our last break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I will be back with Maria for 11 more minutes after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I am here with Maria Horton, CEO of EMESEC, EMESEC.net. I've known Maria probably since shortly after you started your business, 10 years or so. And I don't care where we met. We met somewhere, probably at a WIT event or something. I don't know.
I don't remember. No. I know we just bumped into each other, and then we have conversations.
Yeah. And when they occur, they occur. But there was something that came over one of the PR networks a few weeks back, and it said, Maria has put together a board of advisors. And I'm thinking, this is pretty damn cool. I've done 3 or 4 shows over the years on why small businesses need a board of advisors. So tell people why you thought you needed and why you did need a board of advisors.
It's a great question always, Mark, and I like it. But my board was established this year kind of as the last element of that retooling, which we talked about in the show earlier. I went through and I looked at how the company was doing. I was looking at the advice that I received. And I can tell you, after being in business for almost 14 years, that the reality is, as a CEO, you sometimes need advice and discussions from people who understand your company and might be able to align or give you some additional advice or different advice. And so with our retooling to cloud security and engineering and looking at where we were going with our commercial market, we also began to explore how security in a global nature needs to go forward. And so we were exploring whether or not we want to go and work for NATO. We were looking at all of our companies. We have some commercial companies who are from the UK, and we've been doing work with them. We needed input. We needed input that was different than traditional federal contracting or pure commercial. And so I created a board to kind of once a quarter sit down, look at what we've been doing, provide us some insight or some questions. And in fact, oftentimes it's the questions that are the most valuable, because they're challenging me as a CEO to think about things differently.
Okay. So the next logical question would be, how did you determine the types of people you wanted on your board?
So what I did was I did a reach back. The leader on my board is the former chief operating officer of Concurrent Technologies, which was a nonprofit. I found someone that I could align and sync with, be in sync from a philosophy standpoint. And then I didn't pick those people. I had the leader go out and provide me suggestions, and we worked through a list of 12 to 20 names, past performances and experiences, and we looked at it functionally. I'm a big believer in functionality because I want an outcome, and to get an outcome, I don't necessarily need a specific name or event. I need to think it through from how it's going to impact the company and the performance. So Michael Katz is my leader of my board of advisors, and he came to me with a number of names and individuals. I then went through and I met them. I met what did they want from a board, what did I want from a board. In some instances, the board might have certain demands on their side, whether it be financial or performance or knowledge related to what you're doing in the company. We worked out what was agreeable to me and to the leader of my board, because I allow Michael to work those issues. He comes to me and he goes, it's time for a meeting. What's the agenda going to be? And it's great because it gives me a different level of performance as a CEO. When we selected the board members, it was part of a process of, can they contribute to our current services? Can they contribute advice, suggestions, input? Can they contribute to future services with guidance or advice? Maybe they've done something that previously would contribute to some of the new core capabilities. So the Honorable Loretta Doan is on my board, and she's given me some advice, short form, doesn't take a lot of time, related to CUI and maybe thinking about the future and how CUI plays into sensors, IoT capabilities. And so that's very refreshing because that then filters into the executive management and then down throughout the company.
Yeah, a lot of people remember Loretta from her time at GSA, but prior to that, she also ran a small woman-owned business in the IT space.
She was very successful in her business space at a time in which there weren't so many woman-owned small businesses.
Correct.
And with the sensors and the capabilities, it was completely refreshing. And so I think you have to, I've always been a big believer that you don't have to reinvent the wheel. You can borrow concepts from other business tracks, whether it be finance or marketing or other capabilities, and reinvent them in your space. And the board of advisors should help you kind of frame those questions and those cross alliances, if you will.
Right. Do you rely on them at all for BD, for leads or intros?
No, I don't do that.
Okay.
I do it. The intros come naturally,
right,
Mark. But I think there's been a lot of pressure on some boards to be pure BD revenue generators.
Mm-hmm.
That's a mixed bag. When you do that, you're going to have to think about compensation, or you're going to have to figure out what you're going to do with that.
Right.
The other issue is that you and your team and your company might never learn how to do it yourself. And as you graduate from 8A, or as you want to grow from small to medium-sized business, your team needs to know that, and they need to take the advice and figure out how they're going to do it. Much like a coach on a track team would teach everybody to run a relay.
Mm-hmm. So, final question then. You have 14-year track record here. When you started out, I'm assuming that you wore 50 different hats. You harbor your resources. You gather your resources and use them carefully. How do you determine when and if you're going to use an outside source? So let's say you wanted to go after one of the big GWACs. Would you do that internally? Would you use one of the proposal firms?
That's a terrific way to look at it. I encourage other small businesses, just like my team, to look at consultants, outside resources, other businesses. Much like the cloud environment, I look at all of those resources as being readily available to small and medium-sized businesses that are smart enough to use them. We can't be experts in everything, and I actually think it's better to use people who are experts in certain fields, certain agencies, certain customers, but you have to be smart enough to figure out how to kludge it all together so that you get the best at the time you need it, at the price you need it. I would much rather buy something by the drink and then figure out if I can grow it, or do I go back and make an alignment.
Right. If you have internal people working with the outside resources, how much can they glean? Are they being mentored along the way? I've always been a sunset consultant when it comes to marketing, because I want a point of contact. I want to mentor somebody. So when I go in to do a LinkedIn engagement with a group of salespeople or BD people, I want a point person. So they're learning what I know so they can continue the program when I leave.
I've never heard the term sunset consultant. That's really interesting. But I will tell you, we do that on our security side, because I don't think that business today, whether it be for the government or for commercial organizations, can really afford to use the old-fashioned person in a seat mentality. Mm-hmm. If we're buying things in the cloud, online, and everywhere else, then we need to think about running our businesses where we're using those different pieces for the greatest efficiency and cost and value, both to ourselves as CEOs and companies, but also to our end customers.
Yeah. Oh, you know, it sunset to a degree. So some of my best customers are people who have come back, you know, they're in a new position or they're in the same position, but they've moved up the organization. They need a refresher. They know that I've migrated from, you know, direct mail to social media, right?
Right.
So my longest running customer, I cannot name them, is now we're in our fifth engagement over 24 years.
But see, I think that's great. And I look at that as you're both maturing in different ways, but you're also still in sync with one another. And that's totally appropriate in business.
Yep. Final thoughts for your small business compatriots, please.
My final thoughts for small business, I think that you need to challenge yourself. You need to look out at the economy today. You need to understand where you want to be in the next 2 years. And you need to be focusing on that really clearly. I believe that we're in an era where cybersecurity won't go away. And even if you're not an expert in it, you're going to have to understand it as a due diligence perspective as an owner of a small business, and that the sky's the limit. I'm always an optimist. There's more money to be made. There's other ways to make money. I like it. That's why I'm in business.
There you go. And do your compatriots need at some point to consider that board?
Yes, I think they do. I think it's refreshing and it helps keep you motivated because there you can't think of everything when you're busy doing a number of different activities in your company and you want to be forced to grow yourself as a CEO.
There you go. Always need that outside perspective and a board that is not BD people is a great way to do it. Thank you so much for coming in. Again, you can find Maria on LinkedIn, Maria Horton, or you can at Maria Horton on Twitter and emesec.net online. So
thank you, Mark.
Thank you so much. This is not my day job. If you do need help on the marketing side, it is FY17. You really got to look at your marketing program going forward. It's going to be a tougher environment this year. Narrowing down of number of contractors for a variety of reasons. And your marketing's got to pay significant dividends. Drop me a line, markamtower@gmail.com or mark@federaldirect.net. And thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.